when I first got out of college, got my music degree, and ended up in the Army band in Washington. And I don't bring that up to say, in any way endorse that violent, murderous, sexist, homophobic, racist cult or anything, but I was in it for a while, and then I got out. So here I've tried to live that down ever since. I went on playing with the Army band once in the Midwest. I still remember this guy. We had dinner at the VFW after we'd hit two or three schools that day and played concerts with this jazz band. It was 22-piece jazz band. I played the electric guitar in the Army. That's what I did in the Army. And I suppose if I had to do it all over again, I might not have done that. But it was an education. And we were being hosted for a spaghetti supper or something. And this man got up and said, "We're so happy to have all you young boys from the Army band here, and we just are so thrilled to have you and hope that you'll come back and see us again real soon. And if you don't come back as the Army, just come back as a person." So I figure every now and then I go through some of those places where I went with the Army, from Kankakee and Peoria and out to Missoula, and we rode the bus on these two-month tours, and I now go to those same places, and I've played in some of the same halls. I've played with Paul Winter in some of the same halls, and at the same colleges and things, and I keep thinking, yeah, I'm coming back as a person now. Get ready. So this is a long story. I wasn't going to make it quite so long. I walked down the coast, and we played concerts along the way, and tried to spread the word about peace, and talk about how this Trident II nuclear missile that they were about to be testing, the first of 25 tests. Now, blowing off 25 Trident II missiles, even if you don't have a nuclear warhead on them, there's a little environmental impact to shooting 25 of those out. You know, they land in the ocean somewhere, whatever. But there's a lot of guys there that just really get off on that, and they do it a lot, you know, they test these rockets. And so we call them the Trident II nuclear missile, because they're on the Trident II submarine. And the guys who are into that stuff will tell you that with pride that the Trident II nuclear submarine, and we have a few out in the oceans now, it will put out the destructive power of 17 times all the firepower of all the armies of World War II put together, just on that one submarine. And they're proud of that. So we thought that people should get a different perspective, and I went with a group of I didn't do this part, but I was just, it's kind of an in-joke. I was with a group of veterans, mostly Vietnam veterans, but Vietnam-era veterans is me, and with Uncle Sam's own training, this bunch of veterans infiltrated the firing range, and they were out there on the firing range so that, and of course, people were telling the missile guys, so that they wouldn't shoot off the missile. Well, it held off the missile for quite a while. There were these cat and mouse games going on. And the most impressive story, what reminded me of all this was I heard this story about somebody talking about the fourth level of the rocket and the scaffolding around it and all. Well, they got telephones up there. I know that because a black woman named Willa, who is a single mother, was on this peace walk, and she got out on the firing range all the way to the missile. She walked right up to the missile. Nobody stopped her. She climbed up the scaffolding of the missile and found the telephone up there. And she thought, well, this will be interesting. I wonder if it works. And she picked it up, and there was a dial tone, and she pushed operator. So this person came on from the Space Center, or whatever it's called, Cape Canaveral, operator. And she said, well, I'm up on the scaffolding of the missile, and you should come and arrest me for civil disobedience. I mean, that's the idea of this civil disobedience. Meanwhile, the veterans are out there crawling around in the underbrush out there too, and they have these space age dune buggies out there that they race around in with black glass helmets on in this heat, in the 100 degree heat, and they're racing around out there arresting these guys, and somebody's, here I am. And the vehicle comes after them and they get arrested. But then it's not so funny. Willa spent a year in the Florida State Penitentiary for that. Which is the way this works, you see. If you're standing up for peace in that way and try to do something nonviolent and put your body in the way of the murder machine, you can be a criminal. You can have a criminal record. You can have spent time in jail. And then if they have World War III, we're desperately looking for somebody to have it with now, of course. They're confused right now. But I'm afraid they're going to find somebody sooner or later. But if we do have that World War III, you see, that's legal. They got paperwork for that. They've rehearsed it and everything. So I was walking, now to get back to how I started. I was jogging in Central Park, and I went under this little bridge, and I came to a lion in a cage. No mate, just this one male lion, and not looking the way you'd expect the king of beasts to look. And it all hit me all at once. My friend was on, trials were going on at that point, and my friends were being tried for civil disobedience, which we would prefer to call divine obedience. Make it positive, because I think there's a power greater than this civil one that would have us not murder each other to protect our lifestyle. So I like that term better, but most people know it as civil disobedience. And here, that was all going on, and here I come to this lion, and it suddenly hit me for who you are, for what you look like, for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, for believing what you believe, living the way you live, you can end up in jail. This is called Lion. In Central Park, not feeling my best today. I'd rather not be seen in this condition, but I guess that's not for me to say. You rescued me from the steaming jungle and put me safe on this cement floor, far away from the dangers of the wild. There's no running with the pride anymore. Too old to fight, too tired for rage, heart of a lion dying in a cage. Too tired to resist, but too old to change. Outside the seasons change, but the bars still look the same. Thank you for your civilization. Food from a can, water from a pipe, electric lights. Hey, I'm sure glad I don't have to lie out in the grass under the stars at night. Was I crowding you? Was I pretending you? When I looked you in the eye, were you afraid? Nowadays I just look away rather than confront you in the world you made. Confront you in the world you made. Too old to fight, too tired for rage. Heart of a lion dying in a cage. Too tired to resist, but hold the change. Outside the seasons change, but the bars still look the same. In Africa the rain would come and heal the parched earth, and here in here the water seeps between the stones like the sweat of a toxic body with a chill right to the bone. Central Park was my refuge from the city. You learn to live with what you know ain't right. They take your rights, your pride, it's a compromise. But when they take all you own, would you stand up and fight? When they come for the one you love, you just might. Too old to fight, too tired for rage. Heart of a lion, dying in a cage. Too tired to resist, but too old to change. Outside the seasons change, but the bars still look the same. If you cared enough to look below the surface, you might be surprised with what you'd find. Your blue eyes see the skin of a black man, but I'm the lion. I'm the lion. I'm the lion. Connected to your higher power. Thank you. I thought it was funny. Well, I'm always a little ambivalent about these things. Music from Baja, Mexico, from Baja, Mexico. I got to go down to where the gray whales go every year, to the Bay of Magdalena a couple of times, and sail on the ship called the Don Jose. You go out and get close to the whales. They commute, you know, from up in Alaska, well, the water off Alaska, and they go down the coast, and we see them going by Oregon, and they end up about January, February, down in this warm water, the Bay of Magdalena, and they come there to, you know, spawn. And the next year, they come back to have their kids there. It's convenient, 12-month gestation period. So there's mothers and baby whales and pairs of mating whales. And they're just lolling around on the surface going and stuff. It's very peaceful and wonderful. And I saw dolphins and sea lions and things I'd never seen before. And the water has a certain phosphorescence in there. You know, so when at night the whales dive and you see this Disney effect behind them. It's quite wonderful. So this is named after the boat that we got to sail on. It's called the Don Jose. Thank you. Just as soon let some days go by without worrying about things I haven't done. I would just as soon let some time go by without worrying about battles never won. I would just as soon let a woman or a man live in peace on the land, and before we would judge the way they live their lives, we'd be prepared to lend a hand. The same. I would prefer we'd find a compromise so nobody dies in a senseless fight over how to define the earth or seas or skies. There's a dream of peace not so far away. There's a force and there's a flow to the life we lead. If we will just release and let it be that way. This was designed as a sing-along song now. Has a range of about 5 notes in the refrain. It's not too challenging. Next time around, I know you can do it. I would just assume passing fashion's delight without binding us to all in life that's vain. And I would just as soon let passions be of love and not dominance and war for selfish gain. It would be enough for me the fleeting beauty of the wild that I might be beguiled without boundaries, without lies, that I could see with the eyes and the wisdom of a child. There's a way and there's an ease to the life we lead. There's a dream of peace not so far away. There's a force and there's a flow to the life we lead. If we will just release and let it be that way. And in as in life. Just when you're getting the hang of it, that part is over. So let's give it one more try. There's a way and there's an ease to the life we lead. There's a dream of peace not so far away. There's a force and there's a flow to the life we lead. If we will just release and let it be that way. Could it be time for that late evening storytelling? It's a story I just wrote. I've been writing a lot of short stories, and I don't know what they are. They're just scenes from my life. Most of it is involved somehow in traveling, and so I'm not quite sure what to call it. I was thinking calling it, maybe calling it 10 Years Down the Road or something, but you know, there's all these books about the road, and don't believe any of those people who tell you, oh, it's so hard being out on the road, and, you know, those musicians want sympathy for that. They're doing exactly what they want to do, and I get to go places and have people pay attention to me. It's really... So anyway, I just wrote this in North Carolina. Wisteria grows a radical's life. Following the lead of stiffer souls, but making its own way circuitously. It wraps around a friend or itself for sustenance in a cooperative anarchy, and it does pretty well for itself, climbing 100 feet up a tree, a wall, or a cliff. Whatever host obstacle it's given, it scales. More impressive in their upwardly mobile architecture than the swarming kudzu, wisteria vines can grow to tree dimensions, many inches in diameter. Braided sections will make good walking sticks, witches' wands. We look for good intertwined roots to take home in between sessions sitting with my mother. Her body is thinner than ever, reduced now to the barest essentials for survival. Not life as she would describe it, not walking, gardening, cooking, reading to the kids at the library, correcting everyone's grammar. Legs too thin now, mind too tired. She barely eats and doesn't seem to want to. Her body is an old vine, gnarled and no longer leafing out. I wonder sometimes if she has just gone and left it behind. Vines used to be everywhere behind our house. This house my parents built themselves a quarter century ago, at the beginning of their retirement. Now sold, remodeled, repainted. It looks cozy, but worldly changes have left little of the personality I remember. Gone are my father's workshop, my mother's garden. The world has passed by my mother as well. And I think she's bidded an unceremonious farewell. She and the wisteria will take their spirits elsewhere. When the motel near her retirement home becomes too costly, we stay with longtime neighbors, Glenn and Betty Rounds. He's an old cowboy, author, illustrator of innumerable books and now pushing about 90. She's on the town council. We make plans for a gathering to celebrate my mother's life. She was adamant about no morose funeral. Glenn and Betty think the neighbors would be grateful if we removed some vines. I'd ventured it felt like a bit of thievery. The developer's caterpillars will get them if you don't, Glenn says. We're not talking entomology here. I observe that the grove where the best vines used to be is now two cement mansions roasting in the sun. A walk around the immediate area yields a lot less than I recalled. Glennis lent us a rusty saw. I ponder the character of this aspiring vine. Is it a twisted dependent, imprisoned by its very nature? A name dropper glorying in association, but desperate in some way to break out? Or better, the relentless spirit of an outlaw, a threat to the neighbors, but with an admirable gift for improvisation, a jazz player. Mary suggests perhaps a personality misunderstood. That's more like it. Self-styled, offering quiet service to the grand scheme of things, insights held private, briefly appreciated for a flowering beauty, lasting work not necessarily even fully noticed. That's more like my mother. This woodland has in a few short years turned into blow-dried squares of human dominance. My parents participated, of course, but at least they nestled the modest house in the trees and filled their sphere of influence with green things. They loved the vines and saw nothing about them intrusive upon a civilized retirement. There are python-sized shanks hanging melancholy from the trees, but not much actively growing up. They've all been severed above the ground in some human's preemptive strike. It would appear to be the developer's first wave, or the town's progressive notion to save the tallest, read property value, trees from a long-life wrestling match. A few lower vine sections have disappeared, perhaps culled by aesthetic collectors such as us. But there's more evidence that the fashion is just to kill the interlopers. They may have been among the first inhabitants, but are now considered a detriment. The empire-building conspiracy does not care for wisteria. This ecological apartheid has gone along with the human equality wars in this part of the world. Diversity has not done well, despite the best attempts of a few. No doubt the older generation, interwoven, hardened, has a few stories to tell the new growth. And warnings. Don't grow your hair too long. Be careful what you latch onto. Relinquish some attachments. Learn to work with others. It doesn't matter. The younger generation's revolution is without caution. It seems my mother's spirit may have retreated from these neighborhoods as it has from her body. This was her place, though I trust any energy field that remains has perhaps slipped over, even further over the next hill, past Ridge, past North Valley, past Highland. I jog the back roads, scouting, past the intersection of Massachusetts and Connecticut. Surely this coincidence of two New England states would signal to her spirit a good place to reside. Still, too much human interference sends me further. This is a young forest, only a bit older than she, colonized and ruled by white pine. A forest fire at the end of the last century left a wasteland that appalled human observers at the time. The pines quickly took over the sandhills, giving rise to an abundance of pine prefixes and suffixes, Pinehurst, Southern Pines, Whispering Pines, Pine Manor, even the Pine Dean Jazz Center. Wisteria took equally well to the acid soil, but gets no such press. The pines were fought back for farms, food crops secondary to tobacco and cotton, harder on the earth, but more profitable. A booming economy was served by the railroad so easily constructed over the giving sand and clay. The malleable soil readily surrendered its personality to each new enterprise. A culture of great estates and horse farms gave way to poison-saturated golf courses and subdivisions. The graceful trailing spirals must certainly have been an attractive part of the mystique at one time. I know no save the wisteria campaigns, though. In this time-crunched, cost-efficient world, they've simply gone out of fashion. The cut vines rot to spongy, then crumbly consistency. In the midst of their forsaken ancestors, I hardly feel like removing the coiled spring youth from their lofty visions. We must get further out to untrammeled territory, deep in the woods where the old trees are wired with a rooted energy no Christmas lights could capture. I question our purpose. A few samples of nature's eccentricity to be used for art and ritual, celebrating earth spirituality, isn't that okay? But then, why should I be the vanguard of this human invasion, foreshadowing even more exploitive intentions? For today, I return to the hot blacktop road with its bottles, cans, and fast food litter bouquets laid at the severed feet of the strange fruit. It is not for me right now to tamper with the living, for our celebrations will pick from the sacrificed and preserve with honor veins already given up. My mother's spirit will remain elusive in these secret glades, at least for a while. Thank you. I don't mean to be using you as a therapy group or something, but I guess it's nice to share with you my mother's passing. It's interesting in a way. I've never been with a person who was dying before, and I learned a lot. We had the hospice folks there, and they are some amazing people. And it was quite a nice whole blessed event, I guess, in its way. But, you know, as I go around singing about Mother Earth and celebrating Mother Earth so much of the time, and I often say, when I talk about Gaia and Mother Earth and all that, I don't want to offend anybody's visions of spirituality, but I was never really comfortable with that, you know, bearded old man in the sky kind of thing. And no matter what, much closer to home is this very round woman in the sky, our Mother Earth. And as I talk about all that, I find these days she has my mother's face. It's personalized in a way that I'm sure will be good for a few more songs. Whoops. I tuned that string down for the last song. Well, I get this reputation as being the guy who sings all these songs about the earth and that peacenik guitar player and everything. Sooner or later, you know, we'll solve all the problems, and then people can just ask me, what were those chords you used in that song, instead of talking about politics. But, now, I don't mean to make fun of somebody who gave me a nice compliment, but after a concert once a while back, I get discovered all the time, you know. This woman came up to me and said, I've never heard you before, but all your songs, every one of them, is about something. This song ain't about nothing. There's no subject that I'm on. Just some harmony and some words to sing to leave you when I'm gone. This song ain't about nothing. There's no big thing I'm going through. It's just a feeling that comes over me when I think about sitting around with you. It ain't about how love conquers all. It's not about lies and truth or how the summer turns to fall, or glimpses of fleeting youth. I won't hold forth on war and peace, or the fallacy of might makes right, or law and order, or national defense, or young boys spoiling for a fight. This song ain't about lonely hearts, or loveless, homeless, sleepless nights. Don't need to tell you about hunger or the struggle for human rights. This song ain't about nothing, but I'd just like to say that I hope it makes you happy. Too late, I played it anyway. I won't take on the mystical or where disembodied spirits go. Too outspoken political, they never play it on the radio. It's not about feelings either. Don't want you to think I'm blue. I just like to hold this guitar and the instrumental comes right on cue. Here now, the music's power can be revealing of all that our hopes and fears allow. This song ain't about gratitude, the moment's so brief, but memories last so long. So thanks, you can spare me the platitudes. Just say, remember when Jim was playing that song about nothing? Just some harmony to leave you when I'm gone.
Thank you very much.